Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the first House Committee on Transportation, Finance, and Policy meeting for 2022. And I will call this meeting to order. This is a remote hearing taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by House Public Information Office. So members, to request recognition or if you have questions during the presentations, please use the raise hand function or alert the committee administrator. And one of us will make sure that your questions are answered or we call on you. And at this time, I'll ask our committee legislative assistant, Mr. Dan Dodge, to take the role to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein present. Vice Chair Cagle. Cagle present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg present. Representative Barr?
Here.
Barr present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi present. Representative Elkins? Representative Elkins?
Here.
Elkins present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick present. Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick present.
Kosnick present. Representative Mason?
Mason present.
Mason present. Representative Murphy is excused. Representative Nelson?
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson present. Representative Richardson is excused. Representative Torkelson?
Present.
Torkelson present. Representative West?
Present.
West present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. For some of you veterans on the committee and veterans of our Minnesota House of Representatives, I was channeling my inner Steve Swigum there with that 2022. With the date. But members, today we are, this really is our inaugural day of the year. And this hearing is a continuation of the work that we started on December 14th. As you'll recall, that day we had several presentations about the Federal Investment Infrastructure and Jobs Act. And but we didn't hear from the public. We didn't hear from a lot of the folks that work with us year in and year out, day in and day out on transportation issues. And many of our friends in the transportation community have their ideas about this very historic and important federal initiative. So today's hearing is to hear from the public. It's really a continuation of our December 14th hearing where we heard from the National Conference of State Legislators and state agencies. Didn't have a chance, didn't have enough time that day to hear from the public. So this is really the public's opportunity to weigh in on their visions for the for this, again, historic federal bill. I'll just caution, we have many testifiers today. We really have a strict time limit if people could keep it to 3 minutes or under, preferably or under. I will be chairing most of this meeting. I will have to step out a little after 1:30 for another engagement. Representative Cagle will be chairing the meeting as well. So she will, both of us will really be pretty strict about keeping to time limits because we want to make sure that everybody who signed up has a chance to testify. So with that, we will begin. I just also want to mention that we have posted the materials and written testimony on our committee page, so anyone can view that in conjunction with this hearing. A number of people did choose to provide written comments, and then we'll have some written versions of the testimony that's given today directly to the committee. So I'll start with just a couple of people who have been very involved in transportation over many years, representing some important sectors of the transportation community. And so our first testifiers will be Margaret Donahoe, who is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And following her, we'll have Suzanne Sabatka, the Policy and Research Director of MOVE Minnesota. We're going to start off with them. They'll give slightly longer testimony because both of them have particular expertise in some of the subject areas we're dealing with today. And so we just asked them to start off by giving us an overview. And so first, I would like to call on Ms. Margaret Donahoe for her presentation. Ms. Donahoe, welcome, a warm welcome to the committee. Thank you for all of your work. And please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Margaret Donahoe, Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And I do have some slides that I'm gonna run through pretty quickly, but wanted to give you some of the detailed numbers as we talk about this legislation. So hopefully you can see this. And first of all, I do want to give a really heartfelt thank you to Congress and the administration for getting this legislation passed. Our members were out in Washington, D.C. in September, talking to the congressional delegation about how important this is for Minnesota. So we're very grateful this was enacted into law in November. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk more about what this means for Minnesota. So first of all, so first of all, the important thing to know about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, it does include a five-year surface transportation authorization to replace the FAST Act, which had been the previous five-year surface transportation authorization. And it's really important for the transportation industry and community to have the stability that goes along with a five-year authorization. So we know the dollar amounts, we know how to plan to spend this money as effectively and efficiently as possible over the next 5 years. Unlike other bills, this does include other areas, including broadband, energy, ports, water, a lot of other areas that we don't usually see. And so that means that it did add up to $1.2 trillion, which sounds like an awful lot of money, but it does cover a lot of areas. You can see that the majority of it, though, is dedicated to roads and bridges, along with public transit, passenger rail, airports, ports and waterways. So a lot of it is directed to transportation, which we are very grateful for. The other thing that's important to remember about this bill, and you heard this already somewhat from MnDOT and the Met Council, but the numbers that you often hear, the $4.5 billion for highways and the $820 million for transit, includes current funding levels. So every year, states get money out of the Federal Highway Trust Fund, just like our state highway trust fund. And you can see on this chart that in 2021, the baseline amount was $713.8 million. So the increases that you see each year of this bill do add up to $4.5 billion for the highway formula funds. But the increase over the base starts out at $150 million, increases to $220 million in the last year of the bill for an increase of $925.7 million. So that's really the impact of the bill for highways. And again, for transit, the increase starts at about $35 million in the first year, increases to about $50 million in the last year of the bill for an increase of $212 million over the five-year life of the bill. So getting into a little more specifics, the other thing that's really good about this legislation is that we know the dollar amounts that will come to Minnesota, and we pretty much know how these dollars can be spent. So we can start to plan for what projects will get funded, how this money will be spent. So on this chart, you see the vast majority of the money goes to two programs: the National Highway Performance Program, or NHPP, and the Surface Transportation Block Grants. These are the big numbers. This is the 2021 level for Minnesota, And you can see the increase in each year of the bill for a little over $3 billion over 5 years. These are existing programs. Congress made very few minor changes to these programs. So people are very familiar with how the money can be spent in these programs. The other ones you see here are existing programs that existed under the FAST Act, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, the CMAQ program, the National Highway Freight Program. All of these get very modest increases over the next 5 years. And then there are some new formula programs that were created under this bill. So the dollar amount has been established for each state, and you can see the dollar amount for each of these new programs, including the Bridge Replacement Program. And that one is interesting because the president just made an announcement a couple of weeks ago that this first year, this $60 million for Minnesota, has been released. It's not being held up by anything. The money is going to the states for this particular program. For transit, again, you can see the dollar amounts. I just highlighted the systems that receive funding through 5307 formula funds because that's the largest, again, goes to areas that have a population of 50,000 or more. So you can see the majority of the money is going to Metro Transit. But we also have smaller urban systems that also get money directly from the feds, from the 5307 program. So again, systems can start to plan for how to use these additional dollars. Then there are discretionary programs. And we have two existing discretionary grant programs that are large in terms of, relatively, in terms of dollar amounts. Last week, USDOT just announced another round of solicitation for the RAISE program, the second one here. So states and local governments can start to apply for these funds for this year. Then there are some new discretionary grant programs that were created under the bill. And when you look at these dollar amounts, they're relatively modest compared to the formula funds. So one thing that's important to remember, while we need to wait to see how these discretionary grant programs will work, most of the money is going through the formula programs, not the discretionary grant programs. And there are a lot of competitive programs under USDOT. I'm not going to go through all of these. This is 1 year of funding for all of these competitive programs, but you can see that there are a lot of opportunities for states and local governments to apply for federal grants for various purposes, whether it's bridges or highways or buses or transit or railroads or safe streets. There are quite a few competitive programs. So one thing to touch on, as you may know, there is a continuing resolution keeping the federal government operating at 2021 funding levels through February 18th. That is creating a limitation on the increased funding authorized under the IIJA because that money does need to be appropriated. So we are certainly hoping and working to push our congressional members to support getting a full year appropriation bill passed before February 18th that reflects the higher dollar amounts that are authorized under the IIJA. Hopefully that will happen. There is some concern that they won't reach agreements, in which case the increase in the funding could be delayed. But eventually that money will come to Minnesota. And also, while some have wondered about how the funding can be used, there has been a lot of information released at the federal level about the use of these funds, including some draft guidance by FHWA. And just this week, there was a 465-page guidebook issued by the administration on this legislation, all the programs, who qualifies, how the money can be spent. All of that information is out there. So there's a lot that we know, and so we can start thinking about how these funds can be spent. And then, as I mentioned, the bridge funds have already been released. And for Minnesota, you can see how that $60 million breaks out in terms of state bridges, and then local bridges are what's known as off-system bridges. But again, state matching funds are critical for making sure that we not only can match all of the formula funds, but we also are in a good position to compete with other states and other regions for discretionary grants as well. We know that a lot of states do rely on local sales taxes or other dedicated funds. We think it's important that we have stable ongoing funding over the next 5 years, because we will be dealing with this match need over the next 5 years. So dedicated funding would be preferred, and money that goes through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and the Transit Assistance Account would not only allow for matches for federal funds, but would also make sure that that money can be used for transportation needs that we have in the states, regardless of whether the money is ultimately needed for matching federal funds or not. As you all know, transportation continues to fall behind. We have huge funding gaps over the next 20 years. While this legislation is really, really helpful and does include about a 30 to 35% increase in funding over what we're currently getting, we still have huge needs. Traditionally, the split of federal highway funds, which are deposited directly into the Trunk Highway Fund, so it's at MnDOT's discretion how these funds are used, but traditionally it's been 70% spent on the state trunk highway system and 30% spent on the local road system. And when you think about all the needs all across the state, at 30%, that doesn't put a huge dent in the needs for local roads and local bridges. So again, we would really urge your support to fund those programs in the capital bonding bill, to look at other transportation modes when you're putting together the bonding bill, because while this federal money will be helpful, we still have huge needs that won't be addressed through this legislation. So again, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to take questions or wait until the end.
Thank you so much, Ms. Donahoe. That was very, very helpful and informative. What we're going to do, members, we're going to have Ms. Sobotka give her presentation, and we're going to take just a couple of minutes if anyone has questions, because we really want to get straight into the public testimony. But this overview is really very helpful, and I think you've included some information that we didn't have a month ago. So thank you for that. Ms. Sobotka, you're next. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Suzanne Sobotka, and I am the Policy and Research Director at Move Minnesota. Move Minnesota is one of the leading members of a coalition called Transportation Forward, which seeks to elevate and encourage use of transit, biking, walking, and rolling across the entire state of Minnesota when those modes work well. And we seek to improve those modes through advocacy for new investment and needed policy changes when they don't work well. So to start off, imagine for a moment that the way you access transportation every single day is that your garage door can open to let your car out only once every 30 minutes and only for 30 seconds. I think it's fair to say we would all find this an unacceptable and unworkable circumstance, but these sort of time and schedule constraints are something that transit-dependent Minnesotans face every day when bus service is infrequent. We envision a system in which you could safely walk or bike to a bus stop, and you wouldn't need to worry if you missed the bus, because another one will be along within minutes, and that bus can take you safely everywhere you need to be, to work, school, errands, childcare, healthcare, leisure. We at Move Minnesota are thrilled to seize upon the opportunity that the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act provides, and we stand ready to partner with legislators to deliberately and thoughtfully pursue investments to achieve the goals laid out by federal decision makers. Our transportation system should be safe and modernized, it should promote equity, and it should advance our climate goals. The parameters surrounding how each state can use the federal dollars we receive provide a significant amount of flexibility in how Minnesota chooses to spend those dollars. Because of this, we do not need to choose between traditional transportation needs, such as congestion relief and increasing capacity and access on key corridors, and delivering on these shared values of safety, equity, and climate stewardship. Transit, biking, walking, and rolling bridge these needs and values, and we strongly recommend that these modes play a central role in the use of IIJA funds and Minnesota's transportation future. So as Ms. Donahoe pointed out, we are all waiting with great anticipation for Congress to appropriate the funds designated within the IIJA. As she mentioned, we do have pretty clear parameters on what formula funds will be distributed. And we also stand ready to make plans for the use of those funds in ways that advance the federal goals. These are dollars that transit agencies across the state receive to operate and maintain their systems. And while there can be no doubt that these increased dollars can help with backlogs and filling in lost revenues, we hope that transit agencies will use these dollars in innovative ways that fulfill the goals set forth in the IIJA. Now is the time to consider ways to make buses move more efficiently, like employing signal prioritization on heavily used routes. Now is the time to make transit safer for riders, operators, and the general public with station improvements and additional personnel, such as transit ambassadors who can check fares and respond to minor calls for assistance. Now is the time to use these formula dollars to ensure adequate staffing levels across systems, whether it's having enough drivers to reinstate recently decreased service, or planners who can configure future bus rapid transit routes, or staff to provide technical assistance to smaller transit systems who might not otherwise apply for competitive grants. And like the rest of you, we are eagerly awaiting additional information on some of the new federal competitive grant programs so we can strongly advocate for state and local matching dollars. The 465-page guidebook that Ms. Donahoe referenced certainly has a lot of next milestones that are coming up later in the first quarter of 2022 and in the second and third quarters of this year as well. Capital investment grants could accelerate the build-out of a bus rapid transit network that would greatly improve reliability, frequency, and convenience across the Metro Transit system. State of Good Repair grants ensure that our bus fleet and facilities are modernized and safe. And we were pleased to see preliminary budget proposals from both the House and the governor that included funding that could be used as matching dollars for the low and no emission bus competitive grant program, which could be used to deploy electric buses and their charging infrastructure across the state of Minnesota. Finally, as we talk about transit, biking, walking, and rolling as a means to advance equity, I'd like to recognize that Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan proclaimed that tomorrow is Transit Equity Day in Minnesota. This is a nationally recognized occasion celebrated on the birthday of Rosa Parks, acknowledging the pivotal role transit advocacy played in the civil rights movement of the 1960s. Our work to use transit as a way to advance equity continues today, and the IIJA provides a historic opportunity to do so. We will look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks so much, Ms. Sobotka, for your testimony. Members, We did get a few additional testifiers coming in at the end, and so I'm a little concerned about time. If you could hold, we'll hopefully have some time for questions at the end, but I would like to get right into the public testimony at this point. And so again, thanks to Ms. Sobotka and Ms. Donahoe. Our first testifier is Bellum Ozuna from Layuna. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein, committee members. My name is Bella Mozuna, and I live in Blue Earth, Minnesota, and I'm proud to be a labor and member of LIUNA Local 563. Before I became a labor, I put in 2 years of hard work to earn my associate's degree in medical coding. Due to not having the skills and experience, it was hard to find a job, and it only took me into debt for tuition. And so a friend of mine knew my situation, was a union laborer. She informed me about being a flagger, the wages and benefits, and not needing experience. I decided to give the laborers union a try, in which It allowed me to work on multiple transportation projects across the state and do some traveling. So some of the projects I've worked on are Interstate 169 from Winnebago to Blue Earth. I've done some road projects in the cities as well, and Highway 99 project from St. Peter to La Center. While I was flagging on Highway 169, my two-year-old nephew and my sister would pass by, and he would yell, "That's Bellum, Mom. I want to be a construction worker like Bellum." And he would wave with excitement. He would tell me how he wanted to become a construction worker. Now, he is 6 years old, and he still wants to be part of the construction. And people think that being a flagger is easy, but you need to be 100% focused. And all of the work that goes into transportation construction is demanding and, and requires skilled professionals who know exactly what they're doing. So I'm excited for the promise of career opportunity that is that this funding will create, especially for working tradeswomen like myself, workers of color, and for our greater Minnesota communities. And Chair Hornstein, committee members, my ask for you is this: we need stable, ongoing revenue over the next 5 years to fully fund local matches necessary to make our roads, bridges, and transit safer, more reliable, and better connected throughout all of Minnesota. Once again, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Ozuna, and thank you for your inspiring story and sharing that with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So our next testifier is Marco Hernandez from Copal, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Hernandez, and please state your name for the record.
You got it, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. My name is Marco Hernandez. I use he, they pronouns, and I'm the public policy director at Copal. Just like what others have been saying, I just want to appreciate the president and the administration for signing into law the infrastructure legislation, bringing a lot of money and equitable transportation to across the country and this state. What definitely gives the organization especially a little bit of wariness is if the Minnesota Department of Transportation and if the Met Council are prepared to have the, you know, the staffing numbers as well as the adequate number of trained employees to be able to fulfill a lot of these projects. And so one thing I would like to urge the committee is to work with worker centers across the state, especially those that are BIPOC led. And so we know that Copal has one, Setul, and others that are be able to connect with the state, with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, to be able to connect, especially those from immigrant communities that have authorized work permits to be able to train and to be able to help out, update the infrastructure that we have in this beautiful state, number one. Number two, really also excited and happy about the work that the committee has been doing on public transportation, mainly on the bus rapid transit lines. Those are definitely important. And the more that we have, especially that goes through poor communities of color in the Twin Cities and also in urban and suburban areas across the state, the more chances and opportunities that people, especially those that may not have access to driver's license due to their immigrant status, would be able to go to work, go to the clinic, go to the hospital, pick up their prescriptions, anything that they can be able to do with transit lines that easily connects them to important areas within their city, towns, and communities. And lastly, we want to say when with electric vehicle infrastructure, we urge the not only the committee, but the legislature to work with different legislatures across the Midwest region to make sure that we have adequate charging stations throughout the state, especially along freeways and highways, and also to make sure that there's a diverse, group of electric companies, electric vehicle companies, instead of focusing on just one, especially one that has a an immature CEO that's sort of an edgelord that we don't want to focus so much money onto, so that, you know, people can definitely travel confidently with their electric vehicles, and also to make EVs accessible to those that, you know, providing subsidies and tax credits so that it's accessible to everybody and anybody. That's it for my testimony for today, and I would like, again, to appreciate the chair and members of the committee for inviting me to speak today.
Thank you so much for sharing your perspective, Mr. Hernandez. It's always wonderful to hear from you. Our next testifier, we've got a couple folks from Mankato now. Susan Arntz, and after Susan, we'll have Andy Wilkie. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Arntz, please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Susan Arntz. I serve as the city manager for the city of Mankato. I'm here to talk just briefly about kind of how these funds could have a huge impact in our region. One of the charms about Mankato is that we're not just us. We're not just Mankato. We are an us. So Mankato, the city of Mankato operates MAPLE, which is the Mankato Area Planning Organization, and partner with a lot of the cities in our region to do regional planning. We see these funds as a potential option for us to help communities around us complete projects that they've got on their priority list. We've got $24 million of projects, $24 million in the STIP, but $40 million of projects in the next 5 years that are on our project priority list for communities in this region. So we look forward to, as the guidance come forward, both for the competitive programs, but also the more customarily distributed programs to try and take advantage of those. This area has a strong need for input into airport use of funds. So I think people are surprised to hear that Mankato is home to the second busiest airport in the state of Minnesota. And in one of the presentation materials, it sounded like the majority of the airport funds would be targeted for MSP. I just want to let you know we're here and we could use them. We do not have a control tower, which is a huge project that we've been working on to add safety to that airport. We also need and appreciate the language that talks about the use of local contractors on local projects. It gives us a huge opportunity to partner, like the previous testifier, with people who live in this area to do projects in this area. So we're excited for that. The opportunity to consider electronic charging stations as we do these projects in this area, whether it's on 169, Highway 14, Trunk Highway 22, 60, 68, you know, as we consider those improvements, we make highway improvements once for a very long time, and then it doesn't swing around for a very long time. So it's important that although, you know, not everyone is driving electronic vehicles, it is coming. And so thinking about how we can prepare for that future infrastructure now is a key. And last, I would just say that we'd really encourage equity between how the funds are distributed between Greater Minnesota and the metro area. With that, I'll let my other partners from the region.
Thank you, Ms. Arntz, and I just want to thank you for your perspective, and also to all the testifiers so far. You've been great at keeping it short but also very substantive, and that's what we're aiming for here because we have a long list of testifiers. So thank you,
Ms. Arntz. I set a timer.
Yeah, very good. So you're the model here. 3 minutes or less, folks. Andy Wilkie, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andy Wilkie, Director of Business Development and Public Affairs at Greater Mankato Growth. We're the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Organization, serving nearly 1,000 members in the Greater Mankato area. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I want to highlight for you how the Mankato economy is growing and why thoughtful regional transportation investment is critical to our future growth. Our MSA's population is up 21% since 2000. Of the 32 MSAs in the upper Midwest, we have the fourth highest GDP growth, the fourth highest population growth, and the seventh highest job growth. From transportation perspective, we continue to be a hub for travelers to our community for medical care at a regional hospital and clinic system, education at our five colleges and universities that serve 26,000 students, including the second largest university in Minnesota. Retail, and this is important, We have the highest rate of retail spending per capita than all other Minnesota metros. This shows that we draw more consumers from the surrounding areas into Mankato than leak out to other parts. Employment, our daytime population increases by 40% each day, and agriculture is a core of our economy. We are the green seam. We produce more soybean. More soybeans are processed in Mankato than anywhere in North America. As the legislature discusses incoming federal infrastructure dollars, we hope you'll be intentional about allocating funds in a manner that encourages investments throughout greater Minnesota and specifically regional hubs like Mankato. The legislature should also encourage private sector participation in the construction of infrastructure elements, such as EV charging stations. Public-private partnerships should be an essential element of a deployment strategy of EV charging stations. Making these funds available to businesses and organizations who operate in locations that attract a high volume of vehicles and are likely to include electric vehicles. As businesses continue to make significant investments and our region grows, we ask our public partners to do their share and make investments in infrastructure that enables future economic opportunities in greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And members, I am going to hand the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Cagle for the next few minutes. I have some testimony at another hearing now. So thank you very much. And Vice Chair Cagle, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe then, do we go back up to Brendan Jordan on the list?
Let's see, hold on. I have an updated list, and I believe the next testifier, hopefully Mr. Howe can give you that updated list. I have Ryan from Thilgis, Ted Schoenecker, the Ramsey County Engineer. We have three county engineers coming up now, Mr. Schoenecker, Mr. Thilgis, and Mr. Culver are the next three, and I think Mr. Howe will send you the updated list. And thank you very much, Vice Chair Cagle.
That's good. So, Mr. Schoenecker, if you could state your name for the record and continue with your proceed with your testimony.
All right, Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Ted Schoenecker. I'm the Ramsey County Public Works Director and County Engineer. Margaret provided some of the details of what is in the federal bill earlier in this committee hearing, so I'm going to focus my time on how the bill helps Ramsey County or not. Ramsey County Public Works has five stable, reliable, and mostly dedicated transportation and transit funding sources. These include the Regional Railroad Authority Levy, the County State Aid Highway Fund, the Local Option Sales Tax, the Wheelage Tax, and county bond funds. Four of these are implemented at the discretion of our county board, with only the county state aid highway funds coming from a statewide source through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Because these are stable and dedicated funding sources, we can develop a five-year capital improvement program that identifies and communicates with our county board, cities, residents, businesses, where we are prioritizing transportation investments. However, these funds are not enough to meet the existing and growing needs on our transportation system, which is why we are strong advocates for state bond funds and federal funds to help address these continued needs. State bond programs like the Local Road Improvement Program, the Local Bridge Replacement Program, Safe Route to School Program, help bring additional revenue to local agencies to address these specific needs. This federal funding also does the same thing for us. The difference with the state bond funds and the federal funds is that I typically must compete for them on a project-by-project basis. I am not guaranteed any of the funds that come from these sources. Specifically for the federal funds, I must prepare and submit applications to compete against other counties and cities in the Twin Cities metro area for the formula portion of those federal funds, and I must compete against all other entities nationwide for the discretionary funds. While I believe that Ramsey County has competitive projects, there is no guarantee that we will receive any federal funds on our projects. It takes funding at the local, state, and federal level to meet the needs and demands on our local transportation system. The new federal infrastructure bill will bring more revenues in to ultimately help Minnesota as a whole. But we need the consistent, stable, and dedicated funding to most effectively plan, design, build, operate, and maintain our transportation system. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or committee members have.
Thank you. Next up, we have Ryan Bilgis from Blue Earth County. I apologize if I did not pronounce that correct. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Ryan Tilgis. I am the Blue Earth County Engineer and Public Works Director. Thank you and the committee members for the opportunity to speak with you today. We're grateful that the IIJA will provide increased transportation funding levels as it replaces the FAST Act, and we remain cautiously optimistic about the IIJA project funding opportunities through statewide allocations and competitive grant opportunities that address but don't wholly solve Minnesota state funding needs. I say that we're cautiously optimistic because we're concerned that the increased federal funding will not be as far-reaching into rural Minnesota as many believe, and will likely have a lesser impact on local systems. It's estimated that Minnesota's federal formula funds will see about a 31% increase under the IIJA. As an example, for fiscal year 2026, the District 7 Area Transportation Partnership federal funds for counties was expected to be about $3.42 million, and it will now grow to approximately $4.48 million. For District 7, Watonwan County and Martin County have been selected to receive those funds for two separate $4.8 million projects. With the increased ATP formula funds, both county projects will go from approximately 36% to 47% federally funded. Both projects are still at least 33% or $1.58 million short of their 80% maximum federal funding amount. So unfortunately, this means that a 31% increase in federal funding won't lead to a 31% increase in the number of projects that agencies are able to move forward with. This example just emphasizes how critical Minnesota's state-funded local road and bridge money is to smaller communities in rural Minnesota. Local agencies need a stable flow of state matching dollars over the next 5 years to match federal awarded funds. Local agencies have very limited resources to develop those complex project funding applications, and we struggle at times to compete with discretionary federal grants, especially when positioned against larger projects from major metropolitan areas or other states entirely, as Ted alluded to. In Blue Earth County, we're fortunate to have a regional center and a strong industry in Greater Mankato, yet over the past decade, we've had little to no success applying for a large federal grant applications for a much needed regionally significant road extension project. State bond funds made available through the Local Road Improvement Program, the Local Bridge Replacement Program, and the Local Road Wetland Replacement Program all provide funds necessary to complete local and regionally significant projects that are critical to our residents, our communities, and our businesses. But again, thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Mark Culver from the Roseville City Engineers, and we'll have Brandon Jordan on deck after that.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Culver, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Mark Culver. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Roseville. I'm here representing the City Engineers Association of Minnesota and the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. Last year, I had the honor of presenting to you on the state of the local transportation system, including the maintenance needs and the funding sources we use to address those significant unmet needs. The IIJA bill is a step in the right direction for transportation funding. As you've heard, the increase in funding and new programs will provide an opportunity to fund additional projects and new initiatives. We look forward to working with MnDOT and our ATPs and MPOs to work on the distribution of these funds and make that as equitable and broad as possible. However, as you've heard from the county side, not every city will see money from this bill. In fact, more cities will not get this federal funding than will get this funding. Also, most of our city system isn't eligible for most of these federal funds. Further, even when we do receive the funds, the vast majority of these funds have a local match requirement. A 30% increase in federal funding means a 30% increase in needed matching funds. We continue to rely on our other funding sources for our regular infrastructure maintenance and for the matching dollars for federal funds. Municipal state aid through the gas tax, property taxes, special assessments, and state bonding dollars. An unfortunate reality is that many cities end up using our municipal state aid on required local cost participation for federal, state, and local projects, leaving even less dollars for their actual local system. It is important to maintain our focus on preserving and enhancing our local funding sources so that every community has monies to respond to the growing needs on our transportation system. We appreciate this committee's continued support and delivery of bonding programs such as the Local Road Improvement Program, the Local Bridge Account, the Small Cities Assistance Account, and Safe Routes to Schools. These programs have made significant positive impacts on cities across our state. We encourage you to preserve and expand these programs. Again, on behalf of the state city engineers, we are extremely supportive of the expanded and new programs provided by this landmark federal bill. We stand by ready to work with our partners to spend these dollars, but please keep in mind the additional burden of matching these new funds over the next 5 years of this federal bill. We support additional and enhanced funding through bonding or expansion of other existing funding sources to help with these costs. Thank you again for your time today. I encourage any of you to reach out to me directly with any follow-up questions or comments.
Thank you so much. Next up is Brendan Jordan, followed by then we'll have John Pollard on deck. So, Mr. Jordan, if you could just identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute, and I serve as facilitator for Drive Electric Minnesota. Drive Electric Minnesota is the state's partnership of electric vehicle advocates, including a whole wide range of organizations, including utilities, rural electric cooperatives, nonprofit organizations, auto dealers, and a long list of other partners. We do have a large opportunity in front of us with the infrastructure bill to support a variety of our strategies within the state. I want to emphasize initially that we should look at electric vehicles very broadly, not just as personal vehicles, but as transit buses, school buses. We've also seen recently the launch of a electric car sharing network in the Twin Cities. And all of those things can benefit from the various programs in the infrastructure bill. Drive Electric Minnesota is also very supportive of an equitable approach where we can leverage this funding to assure that there's access for all communities, including making sure that there's access in rural areas and in low-income communities. Finally, EVs are an economic and jobs opportunity for the state. Just to really quickly highlight some of the specific opportunities, there's $7.7 billion in the federal program dedicated to zero emission vehicles. Some funding will be allocated to Minnesota via formula, but a lot of this funding will be discretionary. So I'll echo the points that others have made about the importance of the state providing additional funding so that we can get as much of the discretionary funding as possible. There is funding dedicated to charging stations. There's also funding dedicated to clean school buses. So that's an opportunity ahead of us where we want to support districts that are investing in zero emission school buses. There's also a significant opportunity in transit buses and a smaller opportunity related to electric or low emitting ferries. I'll just echo what others have said about the importance of state investments to match these funds. We have a number of other policy priorities, but which we think would create a supportive environment for EVs and complement these efforts. But in the interest of time, I'll focus on that one main point. Thank you, members. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Next up is John Pollard, and then on deck is Dorian Grilly. So, Mr. Pollard, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Pollard. I'm the Legislative Director for the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 49. I have the privilege of representing over 14,000 members of Local 49 in Minnesota, North, and South Dakota. Members of Local 49 are the operators of heavy equipment in all kinds of public and private construction sites, ranging from roads and bridges, residential and commercial construction, and energy projects across the state. On a comprehensive scale, construction is a $16 billion industry in Minnesota and supports over 130,000 jobs. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly about the potential impact the federal IIJA bill could have on the industry. As has already been said, current MnDOT estimates project an infusion of an additional $4.8 billion over the next 5 years into the federal formula for roads and bridges, which equates to an increase of about 30% in state highway funding formulas. Local 49 is in agreement with the other groups that have testified and would argue and advocate for 100% full match of those federal dollars. Given the funding gap in the state's transportation system needs, it's imperative that the state take this historic opportunity to leverage every single last dollar from the federal investment. For example, MnDOT has testified that even with this significant level of investment, it would still not eliminate the need for local bridge funds. Minnesota has 772 bridges across the state in need of replacement over the next 5 years and an estimated cost of $453 million. Furthermore, working with the laborers research staff, their calculations show for every $1 billion in road and bridge spending, it creates an estimated 7.5 million to 11.3 million hours of work on the construction site, which also equates to approximately 5 to 7,000 job years. And as you all know, investment in the construction industry has a positive ripple effect into other industries such as hospitality and manufacturing. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we wish you well in your deliberations this session.
So much. All right, Dorian Grilly, and then we will be followed by Will Schroer of the East Metro Strong. Still getting back into the groove of name pronouncing here. So Mr. Grilly, if you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Cagle, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I work for the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. We work closely with our national partners on the biking, walking, safe routes, and vulnerable user provisions of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, also known as IIJA. Those partners were happy with the outcome, but realized that the law fell short on transit funding. While the bill does provide much needed resources for active transportation and safe routes, it's not meant to replace state funding. Your continued support for state funding is truly appreciated and continues to be a very high priority around the state and is very much needed. The biking, walking, and provisions of the federal bill include a 60% increase in the formula funding for the Transportation Alternatives Program, which includes safe routes to school, a requirement that states complete a vulnerable user safety assessment, and it makes safe routes to school eligible for Highway Safety Improvement Program funds. The law, as many other testifiers have said, the law includes billions for competitive infrastructure grants for local governments. But the USDOT was given a lot of discretion with these programs, and the guidance they have issued is very focused around a couple goals. Active transportation projects, biking and walking, are recognized as meeting the USDOT's climate, equity, and safety goals. That means that any application that includes biking and walking is guaranteed to fare better than one without. The Bicycle Alliance, like the other testifiers, strongly recommends that the Minnesota legislature create a pool and allocate match funds for state and local governments to use to fully leverage this money. I asked John Howe to include a couple fact sheets in your folder and a couple maps showing that local governments, businesses, and schools are engaged in biking, walking, and safe routes throughout the states. Thanks for your opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much. Mr. Schroer from East Metro Strong, followed by Ryan Daniel from St. Cloud Metro Bus. Mr. Schroer, if you could just state your name for the record correctly, probably, and continue with your testimony. So the extra R's got me.
You did great. Thank you very much. Chair Cagle and committee members, thank you for having me today. And because sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words, I'm trying to share my screen with you. Can you see that, Chair Cagle?
See an email, your Gmail account.
Oh, that's not good. All right. Well,
sometimes if you stop it and try again, it might work.
We don't want to share the Gmail account. And I'm running my timer at the same time. So how about that? How about that, Chair Cagle?
Don't see anything now.
All right. I'm just going to refer you. It's in the packet. You've heard a lot of detail today, and I support and I'm grateful for all the detailed work that folks have put in. I want to share maybe a 30,000-foot perspective with you, and one that I think is relevant to your constituents at the same time. As you think about how to guide and spend some of these funds that are coming to Minnesota. Minnesota DEED and the Federal Reserve just did a survey that found that 58% of the Minnesotans that they surveyed see challenges in getting to work, 58%. And a lot of those challenges are cost-based. Their cars are not reliable. Gas is expensive. You can imagine the challenges. There are some good programs in place to adopt those. They're not equal to the task, but that's a number that I hope you'll keep in mind, is that the number of people who are having trouble getting to jobs, they want to work, and manufacturers, employers want them to work, that connection is difficult to make. At the same time, last year set a record for used car prices. And the chart that I really wanted to share with you, but it's in your packet, is that of the record-setting inflation last year, five of the six largest contributors to that inflation jump were in transportation costs. Gas, unleaded gas, regular gas, diesel gas, used car prices, and rental car prices all led the contributions to the increasing consumer price index. And so the lens that I want to suggest to you today is help your constituents mitigate and adapt to, and in the ideal world, avoid those changes in prices. You don't have a lot of power over gas prices. You have very little power over used car prices, maybe around the edges with some tax policy. But what you can do, and what I hope that you will do, is spend the funds at your disposal, whether those are state bonding dollars, state cash, to enable your constituents to get to where they're going without having to buy a $30,000 used car, without having to pay $3 or $4 gas. And you have the ability to do that. As other testifiers have detailed, there is quite a bit of freedom in the funds in the new IIJA. And what I look forward to is to working with this committee to try and use that flexibility to respond to immediate needs that your constituents are facing today. So you heard the little bell go off, and I want to stick to the guidelines. So thank you for your time, and I look forward to working with you further.
Thank you so much. And I know Chair Hornstein is back, so I will hand the virtual gavel back to him. But next up is Ryan Daniel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Daniel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And we have about 15 more folks, so if everyone can keep it to 2 minutes, we can get this done. And again, this is really in consideration to the people that are waiting to testify. Please keep it short. I think people have been doing a good job, but a friendly reminder. Mr. Daniel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ryan Daniel. I serve as CEO of St. Cloud Metro Bus and also as president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association, or MPTA. MPTA includes almost all of the transit systems in Minnesota, both in Greater Minnesota and in the Twin Cities metro area. The federal infrastructure law will make a big difference for transit service across the state, but particularly for smaller systems in Greater Minnesota. Knowing that we will have stable, dependable funding over the next 5 years through existing 5307, 5311, and 5339 formula programs allows us to plan and provide consistent service. Transit systems have long relied on these federal programs for both capital and operating needs. We are very familiar with these programs and how the funds may be used. Transit service in Greater Minnesota continues to be the critical lifeline many people need to get to work, to school, to healthcare, and to remain independent in smaller communities. Without public transit, many seniors, people with disabilities, workers, school children, and other residents would struggle to get where they need to go and to remain in their towns. Unfortunately, transit service in more rural areas is limited in terms of hours of service and geographic coverage. Many systems are faced with having to deny rides to people because the service is just not available. While the IIJA will provide much needed, stable, and increased funding, it would not take care of all of our funding needs. We know that accessing the maximum amount of federal funding for transit will require state matching dollars. For Greater Minnesota, the estimate is $7 million per year is needed to match and complete for IIJA funds. We urge you to provide stable, ongoing funding to not only match the federal IIJA funds, but to help reduce the ongoing funding gap that has plagued transit systems for many years. One-time money is helpful, but dedicated funding allows for much better planning and for systems to provide consistent, dependable transit service. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much, Mr. Daniel. Thank you for your work and for your very specific thoughts there. That's very helpful. Next, we have either Rod Fournier or Chris Belden from the Duluth Transit Authority. I don't know if it's either Rod or Chris who's on the line. Ryan, okay.
That would be me, Rod Fournier. I am the general manager at the DTA. And okay. Thank you to the committee, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Transit really has, in my opinion, brought into a new perspective since this pandemic. I think the role of transit has the importance of it is really come to the forefront as everybody in transit is working hard to get these essential workers to work and get them students to the university, the colleges, the high schools that really are going to be the future of some of these, you know, these essential jobs that everybody keeps talking about. I think when we look at the DTA, certainly the local match is a top priority for us. Anytime that, you know, we can get that local match on the state as they relate to our federal grants, that's very important to us. Of course, everybody's the aging bus fleets, that's always a hot topic now through the supply chain shortage and the pandemic. We're pushing these vehicles out 2, 3, and even more years past their useful life. And, you know, we typically receive these funds through the Surface Transportation Block Grant. And any additional funds for this program would be very helpful to us and to all agencies. We are soon to roll out our new BRT level of service here in the next 5 months, our goal lines, we like to call that, with the vision of, you know, a full infrastructure build out for bus rapid transit. And, you know, that becomes a key component when we start talking about access and opportunity and, you know, this type of program and the funding that enables, you know, agencies to move into the future like that is critical. And, you know, according to the American Public Transportation, any investments in public transportation have a 5-to-1 return. So I think that we're so excited and appreciative of the administration for the funds that became available. And I think, you know, moving forward for us, I think the local match is really key.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fournier, and appreciate your work as well. So next we have Brian Nelson, and then after that, Keith Nelson. And then if Catherine Sarnecki can get ready, she's after that. So, Brian Nelson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, committee members, for allowing us to present to you today. Mr. Howe, if you could please present the map that I forwarded to you, we would appreciate it. The IIJA provides $66 billion in federal funding for passenger rail spread out over 5 years, of which $36 billion is passenger rail grants for federal and state partnerships to enhance existing routes and add new routes. In addition, there's $5 billion added to the CRISI grant program, which is what the state of Minnesota applied for the second train frequency between the Twin Cities and Chicago. We believe that this offers the state of Minnesota a tremendous opportunity for expansion of rail routes in Minnesota. And as you can see on the map, we are strong advocates for all of the routes in red, but we urge the state to focus on three of those routes for expansion to take advantage of this bill based upon ridership and population served, infrastructure already in place, and the cost to implement. And these three routes are Twin Cities to Duluth, extending the second train from the Twin Cities to Fargo-Moorhead, and adding new service from the Twin Cities to Des Moines and Kansas City, which would connect us to cities in the West, such as Denver, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. These three new routes alone would provide new or expanded rail service to more than 30 Minnesota communities and serve about 70% of the state's population. Representative Alex Hausman will introduce a bill shortly in this committee for MnDOT to begin studies on the Twin Cities to Des Moines route and extending the second train to Fargo. These new routes would benefit small and medium-sized communities throughout the states economically, provide a very needed mobility option for a variety of audiences that are largely dependent on cars today. It will reduce dependency on highways and related maintenance, along with energy and greenhouse gas savings. And the infrastructure spending for more passenger rail benefits freight railroads as well, as it reduces freight bottlenecks in various locations and enhances railway crossing safety. Other states have expanded rail corridors in a bipartisan fashion, such as Michigan, Illinois, Virginia, and North Carolina. And we believe that the state of Minnesota should take advantage of this historic and unique opportunity to expand rail passenger service in Minnesota.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nelson. Thank you. And the map will be available on our website and I think for members' packets. And now we have Mr. Keith Nelson, a wonderful St. Louis County Commissioner. Welcome back to the committee, Commissioner Nelson. It's Commissioner Thank Nelson you. With us.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. While I enjoy meeting with you via Zoom, I would much rather get on that train and take a ride down and actually be able to sit in that committee room and enjoy the history of that great state capital with you. First of all, I apologize. I feel a bit underdressed here today, but as I left the farm this morning, it was 28 degrees below zero. And I have to tell you, this flannel shirt looked a lot better than that dress shirt. So forgive me. I mean,
you are forgiven, Commissioner. You are forgiven. Proceed, please.
Secondly, Chair Hornstein, seeing you today does remind me of a dear friend and a former colleague of mine on the St. Louis County Board. And thank you for that. Yeah. But before I go much further, I want to make certain that I thank Representative Mary Murphy for introducing the bill for the money to match the $320 million in federal funding that would bring NLX passenger rail service from Minneapolis to Duluth. This is the most shovel-ready project, and this is according to Amtrak, in the United States of America. I've been a county commissioner for roughly 20 years, and I've worked on this project for 17 of those 20 years. This is a long time coming, but we've done our homework. We've got all of our federal environmental work done, findings from both the federal government, from the state of Minnesota, and the state of Wisconsin. All of those issues are taken care of, which means we can put boots on the ground, estimated 3,000 workers to work building this passenger rail system out. Safety, not only on our passenger rail line, but also on the roads that are throughout the system, the tracks from both Duluth down to Minneapolis. Not only are there going to be substantial improvements on this line for passenger rail, but the freight rail component of this has an immediate result. So these investments that we're asking for to match these $320 million in federal monies that are available are critical to northeastern Minnesota. They're critical to transportation throughout the state of Minnesota. I think I'm as far north as you've heard from today. And for that, I am appealing to my friends in the Metro. I was just down there on Monday for some meetings. I appeal to my friends in the Metro to take a look at that wonderful Great Lake and imagine the ability to travel there to and fro. Imagine the impact that this will have on my military veterans in northeastern Minnesota. Over 15,000 of them in St. Louis County alone to be able to access health care through the VA hospital in Minneapolis. So we're anxious for this. We've waited a long time. Again, we're shovel ready. I want to emphasize shovel ready. We will get this done. It will be done in a fashion that complements all of the other systems that come to the hub of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And again, thank you all for your time and thank you all for your efforts on that committee furthering transportation needs here in Minnesota.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Thank you, Commissioner. And members, in your packets, I believe Commissioner Nelson has some additional letters of support for this project. So take a look at those. Next up is Ms. Catherine Sarnecki from the St. Paul Port Authority and also the Minnesota Freight Advisory Committee. And we have Tim Veldy and Bentley Graves after him. And again, just a reminder to keep your comments as brief as possible. Please proceed and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and representatives. My name is Catherine Sarnecki. I'm a registered civil engineer in Minnesota. I'm the Senior Vice President of Real Estate and Development for the St. Paul Port Authority. I'm an executive member of the Minnesota Ports Association, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Freight Advisory Committee. It's my honor to talk to you today about the importance of funding for transportation, especially on our inland waterway system. More aggressively funding port infrastructure now will position the state and its agricultural and industrial sectors for long-term success. Funding port infrastructure, especially at this time, is smart for several reasons. First, and maybe most importantly, the Minnesota Department of Transportation's Port Development Assistance Program funding, we've requested $28 million this year, is vital to being able to access federal funds for competitive port infrastructure grants funded through the IIJA. This year's funding, we heard from Margaret Donahoe, funding for ports will also have increased, but the need for infrastructure is great. We have identified, in addition to the $28 million request for this year, over $125 million in public port infrastructure needs. The key to being able to unlock those competitive grant funds is to being able to have state funds that can be used as the match, as many folks have talked about. One thing I didn't realize, since we have applied for many federal grants and we're not successful until just this December, we found out we received a port development improvement grant. Our match amount from the federal government for that project is 34%. And they told us that was a key reason why this project was selected. They like to be the last one in and they like to fund the least amount of money. So although the programs allow you to have up to 80% federal funding, successful grants typically only get only request about 50% funding, and that's been true for Tiger Infra and the Port Development Improvement Program. Second, global freight demand is projected to triple between 2020 and 2050, according to the Intergovernmental Organization International Transport Forum. While we seek to bring down greenhouse gas emissions, address climate change, we need to emphasize the use of our waterways as the most efficient mode of freight transportation. Third, global supply chains are strained from the pandemic, and these disruptions translate for opportunities for Minnesota to strengthen our national supply chains. Infrastructure investments enable Minnesota's ports to be creative and nimble in providing supply chain solutions. The waterways have the most capacity in our state to take on additional freight options. And lastly, as port cities, we need to be alert to the need to increase resiliency in the face of increasing frequency and intensity of storms. We are indeed building back better. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Our next testifier is Tim Veldy. Or Veld, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chairman Hornstein and members, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Tim Veldy. I'm an active Minnesota Farmers Union member. I farm in Yellow Medicine County, western Minnesota, on the land that my great-grandfather broke up in 1886. We've heard some compelling testimony from the metropolitan area and some of our regional hub cities and their areas. I ask you to please remember the impact that this transportation funding would have on rural Minnesota, the farming community. As farmers, we're dependent on the highway system and farm-to-market roads to get our products to market and also to get supplies in. When the roads fall into disrepair, damage that causes on trucks and the challenges that makes in transportation are very high. Nobody wants to go down a road that's unsafe and has potholes and everything in it. We've had some roads patched and upgraded slightly in western Minnesota, but we could use much more out here. It isn't just the farming community that's dependent on this. There's a lot of rural manufacturing in some of our smaller communities, and for them to get their supplies in and their manufactured products out also requires good transportation system and roads that are safe and don't damage equipment when it's going down the road. A recent study by the American Society of Civil Engineers showed that there are 5,000 miles of roads in Minnesota that are considered to be in poor condition. Many of those roads are out in rural Minnesota. So I ask you to please leverage the federal dollars that are available to us so that we can bring our roads back into repair. And I ask you to please remember rural Minnesota in your road system. We are dependent on you, and if you eat, you're dependent on us. So please keep us in mind when it comes to the funding, and thank you again for allowing me to testify.
Thank you so much, and thank you for sharing your very important perspective. We appreciate it. We'll be in touch with you throughout this process. Our next speaker is Bentley Graves, and following Bentley will be Luther Winder. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graves, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Transportation has long been a cornerstone of the Chamber's public policy advocacy efforts, and that's because, as my colleague from Greater Mankato Growth, Andy, put it so well, businesses rely on a safe, reliable, efficient, multimodal transportation system to get their goods to market and to get their employees and their customers to their door. And as it has been mentioned already thus far, IIJA is poised to make a generational investment in Minnesota's transportation infrastructure. But as has also been noted, we have some work to do to bring those dollars to Minnesota. We, along with partners in labor and in the construction industry, have formed a coalition to call on the administration and the legislature to quickly and collaboratively identify and secure those resources necessary to draw down those dollars and secure the federal match. And we believe that our state surplus and the bonding bill this year give us the opportunity to do that. But we also believe that the state's financial situation also gives us the opportunity to go further and to continue to broaden the base of financial support for the system through efforts to bring more of the auto parts related sales taxes into transportation and continue to make those long-term investments well beyond the time of the IIJA. So we continue to look forward to working with you all to make these investments and to make good on the opportunity that we had before us here in Minnesota. And again, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you, Mr. Graves, and we look forward to working with you as well throughout this process. Our next testifier is Mr. Luther Winder. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Winder. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Luther Winder, the CEO of Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, also a member of the Suburban Transportation Association, made up of three other suburban transit providers, of which we have a population of 560,000, accounting for about 15% of the metro area. It's important to note, and I do like how the presenters talked about the IIJA funds. The IIJA funds were allocated to communities of over 50,000, of which all of the suburban provider communities fall into that. And there was an appropriate appropriation of over 31% that came into the region that went to the council for allocation. To date, suburban providers have not received our allocation of how we are going to be able to use those IIJA funds in the future to better help and assist in our communities as we look to build back better. To date, suburban transit providers have not received one penny of additional funding from either transportation bills or passed by the current administration. But why does that matter? Because we talk about how equity, but equity requires access, and we have not had access to any of the funding. As we look at the affordable housing, just to see why there's a need there, look, there's been 351,000 affordable housing units built in our seven metro county areas since 1996, of which 25% were built in our 12 communities, 25%. 18% of those were built in the core, the urban center area, and the 57% remainder were built within the region. In order for us to build back and leverage as we continue to see our commuters going back to be returned to work, we need access to funding or allocation. And we hope to continue to have this conversation with the legislature as well as our MPO in order to meet the needs of the region, as we all want to see coverage and access for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Winder. And next up we have, I believe, Peter Wagenius from the North Star chapter of the Sierra Club. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Wagenius. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Peter Wagenius, the Legislative Director of Sierra Club. Mr. Chair, a big influx of federal funding naturally reminds people of the 2009 Recovery Act. As with 2009, today's infrastructure law presents a big opportunity for Minnesotans, but it's not the same. In 2009, the objective was to address high unemployment by spending money as quickly as possible. But USDOT has been clear, today's infrastructure law is meant to produce sustained growth of high-paying jobs, especially green jobs, over 5 years. This deliberative pace is a good thing. President Obama said one of his lessons from the Recovery Act was that shovel-ready projects are rarely a real thing. There are just some projects that can be engineered faster than others. But fast projects aren't necessarily the best projects. We know that speed doesn't benefit our goals on climate or equity. So, MnDOT and Met Council should be moving aggressively to plan a network of bus rapid transit projects, both arterial BRT and highway BRT, over multiple years. That is what equity and the climate crisis demand. Today's opportunity reminds me less of 2009 than of our experience in the mid-aughts, when a bipartisan coalition of cities along 35W were advancing what later became Orange Line BRT. We did the planning in advance, so when a funding opportunity arrived from the Bush administration, Minnesota was able to seize it through a competitive process. In Minneapolis alone, the city's planning investment of $1 million allowed it to get $33 million to rebuild two streets downtown with double-wide transit lanes, making downtown BRT ready. In total, our region got $134 million for the 35W corridor all the way to Burnsville from the Bush administration. Minnesota also provided needing matching funds, so our federal tax dollars, which could have gone to other states, came back home to Minnesota. Members, when it comes to federal transit funding, that is the question before you today. Would you rather our tax dollars fund a bus rapid transit network in Minnesota or fund LRT projects in other states? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wagenius. Our next testifier is Elizabeth Irvin from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Irvin. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Irvin. I'm a senior transportation analyst for the Union of Concerned Scientists. On behalf of UCS's more than 6,800 supporters in the state, thank you to the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today at really a critical moment in moving toward a more sustainable, equitable transportation system. As some of the previous testifiers have illustrated, states play a crucial role in turning the provisions of the IIJA into tangible air quality, safety, and quality of life benefits for today's residents and the generations to come. The decisions we make over the next few years are an opportunity to address the impacts of climate change and undo harmful infrastructure policies that disproportionately affect the health and mobility of people of color and low-income Minnesotans. Decision makers should ensure that reducing emissions and increasing equity, specifically including racial equity, are top-line goals of the state's transportation investments, and evaluate projects based on those goals for both formula funding, including the highway programs and SDBG, and also potential applications to competitive grant programs. And as other testifiers have mentioned, committing state resources to these goals as well. The Biden administration has made clear that they intend to infuse equity, climate, and community engagement into competitive grant selection. And for Minnesota to successfully access much of this funding, we will need to make the case for how chosen projects advance the region's climate and equity goals. Thoughtful equity measures developed in collaboration with impacted communities and technical experts can help make this case, and the legislature can play an important oversight role of transportation agencies. As part of a commitment to reducing emissions, decision makers should use IIJA funds to bring new vehicles into their school and transit bus fleets through programs such as the Clean School Bus Program. And we strongly encourage you to consider going all electric. Electric buses are available from several domestic manufacturers and are being integrated into fleets across the country. Their deployment reduces health impacts of diesel exhaust while also saving agencies money on operations and maintenance. We submitted more detailed written testimony. I know we're getting close to the end of this hearing, so I'll cut myself short there. But we're more than happy to serve as a resource to the committee going forward, and we look forward to working with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ms. Irvin. And Ms. Irvin did provide written testimony, and she does have more details about in her letter on what she was testifying on. So thank you so much for that. We're going to extend till 2:35 so we can get everybody in. And I think we can get everybody in if folks keep it to a minute or two here. So, our next testifier is Abby Breidach, followed by Jeff Krueger. Ms. Breidach, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hi there. Sorry, I was all turned off. Am I good?
You're good. We can see you, and welcome to the committee.
Nice to see you. Nice to see the committee members, the ones that I can see. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Abby Breidach. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. Like my colleagues, I'm here to share comments on the impacts of the federal infrastructure bill will have on the road paving industry and the actions we're taking to meet the challenges and opportunities that this legislation will provide. I'll address quickly labor, materials, and sustainability. First, we well know that additional workers will be needed. One Minnesota paver shared with me lately that they have already hired an in-house HR recruiter to identify new avenues to find employees. We anticipate women and minorities will make up a large percentage of our new workforce. We also anticipate that many of these new hires most likely won't have experience in the industry, and we're committed to training and mentoring these folks. Another approach to our labor solution is becoming more efficient by leveraging technology, investing in new equipment, and creating a culture for innovation. Regarding materials, asphalt's already the most recycled product in North America. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the FHWA reports that about 80 million tons of asphalt pavement is reclaimed each year, and nearly 100% of that total is recycled. However, there's a lot more that can be done in Minnesota to reduce the demand for virgin material use. More research and investment could be made into reusing materials. Recycled asphalt pavement or wrap could be utilized at a higher percentages in our asphalt mixes. The asphalt pavement industry in Minnesota currently incorporates 25% wrap in their mixes, while in other parts of the US and across the world, 50% wrap is also being used successfully. And finally, regarding sustainability, using more recycled asphalt is part of the solution, but nationally, the asphalt industry is committed to meeting a goal of net zero carbon emissions during asphalt production and construction by 2050. We'll do this by partnering with our customers, meaning the state and locals, to reduce emissions through pavement quality, durability, longevity, and efficiency standards, by developing a net zero materials supply chain by 2050, and by transitioning to electricity from renewable energy providers in support of net zero carbon electricity generation. I share this to ensure a sense of confidence.
Thank you, Ms. Rydick. I'm sorry, we have to move on. Sorry.
That was my last sentence.
Okay, I appreciate it. And we look forward to working with you throughout the session. We have next Jeff Krueger, followed by Cap O'Rourke and Tom Sorrell. And thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Krueger, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Krueger, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Townships, otherwise known as MAT. Thank you for allowing me to this opportunity to speak with you today. MAT represents 1,780 townships with over 914,000 residents. Townships maintain over 55,000 miles of roads, which is 39% of all roads in Minnesota. Road and bridge expenditures are the largest expense for townships at over $170 million per year. Unfortunately, townships' portion of state funding has not kept up with the enormous task of maintaining our aging roads and bridges. We request the legislature provide an annual $20 million increase for township infrastructure. Regarding the IIJA funding, we have no reason to believe that Minnesota townships will receive much, if anything, from this bill. The IIJA funds are a combination of competitive and formula-based grants, which require the filling out of grant applications to receive funds. For historical perspective, ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, was a formula-based grant program. Last year's American Rescue Plan Act afforded townships the opportunity to participate. However, townships had varying degrees of challenges when it came to applying for such funds. Townships do not have hired staff to write grant applications. Many lacked broadband service, and applications were required to be submitted online. Of the 1,780 townships, my office alone applied on behalf of 425 of them. Yet there are still 440 townships who did not apply at all. Calculate that out and you'll see that 48.6% of townships either didn't have the means or the ability to apply for ARPA funds themselves. What we need are dedicated and sustainable dollars now for every township. Last year, there was a bill asking for dedicated funding to come from auto parts sales tax. We ask that you revisit that bill in order to fulfill our need for an additional $20 million in dedicated funding for Minnesota townships. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Krueger. Next up, we have Cap O'Rourke and then Tom Sorrell.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Cap O'Rourke and I am the Executive Director of Minnesota Small Cities. We represent the over 700 cities in the state of Minnesota that have populations under 5,000. I'd like to first off thank you for the money last year, which was one time $18 million that would go to our cities across the state. As you know, and we supported both the House and Senate plans for dedicated ongoing funding. Unfortunately, neither of those plans made it to the final bill. We are here to tell you that the IIJA bill, like many have said, may be great for some modes of transportation or positive for the Minnesota small cities. Very little of this will make it down to our community members. We do not have the means to compete on both nationally and in-state, and we often will not have the resources to do matching grants. We would urge the legislators to once again either come back with ongoing dedicated funding or another one-time funding source to help out Minnesota small cities, who are the only entity who do not get any state funding for our roads in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you so much, Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, members,
we have two more testifiers, and then we will adjourn. Our former and wonderful Commissioner of Transportation is with us, Tom Sorrell, and then we'll conclude with Matt Zeller. Mr. Sorrell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein.
For the record.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. My name is Tom Strell. I'm the Director of Public Programs for SambaTech. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Council of Engineering Consultants. Engineering is a lead indicator of economic performance. When state and local transportation agencies can't develop long-term funding programs, our firms have a difficult time hiring engineers or making necessary equipment purchases for designing and delivering those projects. When firms aren't working on pre-construction activities, those projects can't move forward to construction, which means fewer construction workers working and less economic activity being generated. The transportation community has three legs that must collaboratively work together in a high-performing way: public agencies, consultants, and contractors. All three legs of the community need to be healthy for infrastructure projects to be consistently delivered on time, within cost, and on schedule with the highest of quality. It is extremely vital that public agency match is provided over the lifetime of the federal bill so that we can have a high-performing industry in Minnesota that can anticipate projects, react, and deliver. It's also important to note that reliable and consistent sources of fund will allow the engineering community to help determine capacity needs to support the public agencies. ACEC Minnesota consists of an incredibly diverse group of firms from small to large. These firms are local, regional, and national. They work in every sector of our economy. The state of Minnesota has been very resilient, responding to engineering challenges in the past, and has always used existing capacity and new resources to deliver critical projects, including some that were unexpected. As an industry, all engineering firms stand by, ready to deliver the projects from the IIJA. Collectively, we feel confident that we can currently have the capacity to perform at a very high level. Those were the main points I wanted to share. I think I'll leave it at that for the sake of time, and thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you. I'm going to say Commissioner Sorrell, thank you very much. And we look forward to, you know, your input as we put this bill together for matching funds. So thank you.
Thank you.
Our last testifier today, members, is Matt Zeller from the Minnesota Concrete Pavement Association. After Mr. Zeller's testimony, I'll make some very, very brief announcements for the committee, and then we will adjourn. Mr. Zeller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Matt Zeller. I am the executive director of the Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota, which represents contractor and material suppliers that produce the vast majority of the concrete pavements in Minnesota. I'm a former MnDOT engineer of 10 years, and I have over 30 years experience with concrete paving construction. Thank you for allowing me to testify at today's hearing. First, I'd like to state that our organization strongly believes in the idea of build back better. For far too long, the status quo has been short-term fixes and short-term thinking, which has led us to the deteriorated highway system that we have today. We believe that long-term fixes are a better investment, both economically and environmentally. We cannot afford to waste this once-in-a-generation opportunity on just more of the status quo. Minnesotans are increasingly demanding that our road construction simply get in, build it right, build it to last, and go away, preferably for a long time. The new federal funding bill and the state of Minnesota surplus before you combined to provide us with an unprecedented opportunity to invest in long-term solutions, which will serve the public. This new money could easily go a long way toward bettering the health of the state pavement network by requiring these funds be spent solely on upgrading the existing projects in the current STIP and CHIP to long-term fixes. By adding 25% to the pavement costs, we easily add 50 to 100% more life, which is a tremendous return on our investment. Long life concrete pavements can easily be designed to last 50 to 75 years. An advancement in concrete durability has led us to be able to create concrete with locally available materials that can easily withstand the harsh environment we call home. For example, there is a neighborhood up in Duluth where the concrete streets have been in service for over 110 years. Concrete pavements also have inherent environmental benefits. As a much stiffer roadway, concrete increases fuel efficiency by 3 to 7% for semi-trucks, with similar savings for cars. For Minnesota's interstates, this means that using all concrete pavements could add up to 24 million gallons of gas saved, as opposed to a 100% blacktop system. These fuel savings convert to eliminating 235,000 tons of CO2 emissions annually. We look forward to continuing these conversations. Upgrading concrete helps us be better stewards of our critical highway infrastructure as well as the environment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Zeller, and to all of the testifiers that are still with us, a deep appreciation. Your testimony is so valued, and as I think our committee members can see, we have some really important decisions to make here in the next couple of months. We want to make them with our partners that have testified and many others. We have, as you all have said, a great opportunity to make some critical investments in our transportation and transit infrastructure in the coming months. Members, before we adjourn, I just wanted to give you a heads up that on Tuesday, February 8th, our next hearing, we're gonna be focused on highway transportation safety issues. And we'll be hearing from folks involved in the Towards Zero Deaths Initiative, as well as other really important safety initiatives in our state. And so with that, members, this meeting is adjourned. Have a great weekend, and thanks to everybody for participating today.